It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Dave Anthony. Today, the still simmering debate about where COVID actually came from in China. It may never actually be fully known. There is a growing consensus that it leaked out of that lab in Wuhan, China, back in 2019, something that many Republicans in Congress believe. So does the former director of the Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Robert Redfield. We talked to him the other day after he had testified at a House hearing about why he believes COVID leaked out of that lab. Now, we also talked to the doctor who was leading the CDC when the pandemic was declared in 2020 about attempts to tamp down that lab leak theory as disinformation around that time. And that involves another key Trump advisor who also later became a Biden advisor on COVID, Dr. Anthony Fauci. You'll even hear Dr. Redfield react to what Dr. Fauci said about his testimony. So as you can imagine, the conversation was too long to fit entirely into our rundown segment on Friday. Today, we play all of it for you. And as always, thank you for listening and invite you to come back every day. And now Dr. Robert Redfield on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Joining us again on the Fox News Rundown is Dr. Robert Redfield, former director of the Centers for Disease Control back when the pandemic first hit and was declared in the Trump administration. Dr. Redfield, thank you for being back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me there.
So we have a lot of focus now on where it all began. The origins of COVID. We're now more than 3 years into this pandemic. There was the big hearing as Republicans who now control the House are putting an emphasis more on investigating COVID's origins. You testified at a hearing that you believed that this all came as the result of a lab leak. So how definitive do you think it is? How confident are you that that's how COVID started?
Well, I think there's two dominant hypotheses. The spillover hypothesis that it came from a bat to some animal that's yet to be found 3 years later, the man. And then the other is that it was a virus that was working in the laboratory that, in my view, got educated how to infect human tissue and then accidentally was released from that laboratory. I have my own view, a high degree of confidence in its laboratory origin. I think truly the hypothesis that certain people have that it came from a spillover event really isn't consistent with the data. And I think it's unfortunate that there was such an aggressive attempt to back in 2020 to really put forth a single narrative rather than have an honest debate about the two scientific hypotheses. I had called Fauci and I'd called Farrar and I'd called Tedros and a CDC director. And I said, you know, we really have to go after this scientifically and find out of these two hypotheses, which one can we find evidence for? And unfortunately, the scientific community very rapidly centered around a single hypothesis, which was the natural spillover, and really did target people like myself that tried to suggest it may have come from the laboratory. But I have a high degree of confidence in that. I think the FDA has a moderate degree of confidence in that, and you saw the Energy Department has low confidence. I think, sadly, as I said in the hearing, the answer is not going to come from science anymore. We could have answered that, I think, scientifically if we had done what we needed to do back in January, February, and March. We could have answered it if the Chinese had taken my offer to put my team in there in January. But I think we're beyond now where science is going to answer the question. I think the question is going to be answered by the intelligence community. And we'll see how much intelligence Biden releases. But I would predict that over the next several months, over the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, you'll see a number of the intelligence communities begin to transition their assessment, similar to what we saw at the Energy Department.
Yeah, when you say that you can't answer it anymore, is that simply because you just can't get the information out of China, that there's no way of accessing that?
I think, one, we can't get the scientific information we need now. And secondly, so much time has passed that a lot of the scientific evidence that we want now is blurred. But the intelligence is still there. I'm still of the view that there'll be several defectors that will come forward and really make it very clear what really did happen. And I do think the intelligence community already has an enormous amount of information that is going to continue to point to the lab leak.
Okay. Well, this lab that everyone's focused on in Wuhan, where the outbreak started, it studies coronaviruses, correct? So it would make sense that COVID would be born out of some sort of a leak, right? I mean, if I know Jon Stewart made a big deal of that one time on the Colbert show, that, look, it's the lab that studies coronaviruses.
Yeah, I thought Jon Stewart was really, was very good in what he said, you know. And I think, you know, just like I'm saying, listen, that virus, that laboratory studies coronaviruses. That laboratory published in 2014 that it accomplished one of its major goals, which was to teach coronaviruses to infect human tissue, right? And they published that in a scientific journal, and they thanked the NIH for the help, for the financial support for doing those studies. And they were able to make the virus now that could not bind to human tissue, learn how to bind through what we call the ACE2 receptor. And so they accomplished that basically 6 years before the pandemic.
Okay. Now, help me understand this, because you're a virologist. You've been studying this for decades. We listening to you are not. So this is something, is this what people have debated as gain of function research?
Yeah, the laboratory was involved in gain of function research and focused particularly on how to get this bat viruses to change their species tropism so they could now infect humans,
okay,
not just bats.
Okay.
And they did that by manipulating what we call the binding site that this virus uses to bind to its target. And by doing that, and you've heard it in the news, we believe they inserted a furin cleavage site. And all that means is they put a cleavage piece in so the virus would cleave and change the orientation of the binding site. So this binding site, which naturally doesn't bind to human tissue, now with this furin cleavage site, aggressively bound to human tissue. And what I try to tell people, where Fauci's theory, yeah, I think has a lot of problems for me as a virologist. Now, Tony's an immunologist, but I'm a virologist. If you ask the question about the current COVID virus that supposedly came from bats, from nature, that virus no longer can efficiently affect bats.
Okay.
It infects humans.
All right.
And I believe that change happened in the laboratory through what we call gain-of-function research.
Now, there was a lot of talk as the natural occurrence from bat or animal to human, that there was this market in Wuhan where they sell wild animal meat, and supposedly the concept being that the bat had maybe bitten one of these wild animals, and then people consumed that and...
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
And therefore, that's how there's the intermediary. Why is that theory implausible to you?
Well, because If you look at SARS and you look at MERS, both of which came from bats to an intermediary to humans, the one thing when that occurred, neither of those two coronaviruses ever learned how to efficiently go human to human. So when you looked at SARS in the original outbreak in 2003, we had less than 1,000 cases in the world, right? We have millions of cases of COVID. Same with MERS. So these coronaviruses, when they jump species, they don't immediately know how to efficiently transmit in humans. But when this virus came into humans, it literally was probably the second most infectious virus we have in humans, behind measles. So it's just not natural. It's not plausible. It's not how these viruses jump species. Every virus, you can't say every virus is the same, but coronaviruses don't do this. The second problem I have with it, and this is where people are being disingenuous, and that's probably a polite word, right? They say it came from the wet market in the end of December, all right? The fact is we now know for certain that this virus epidemic Wuhan probably started between August and October. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do with the wet market.
Okay.
It happened months before the wet market. So if those scientists who published the Proctor and Origin were maintaining their scientific integrity, the first thing they should do now is retract that paper. Because the epidemic did not start the way they said. It started months earlier.
Now,
and we know that for a fact because in September, and this has been declassified, and there'll be more declassified hopefully if Biden signs a bill, but we do know in September, and it's declassified, that laboratory did three things in September, mid-September. It erased all the sequences of the bat coronaviruses that they ever sequenced. It's highly irregular. Scientists usually don't erase their work. And I think it's important because they didn't want to be able to allow people to trace the sequence differences, particularly when it came to the furin cleavage site, et cetera.
Okay.
The second thing they did is they put that lab in charge. The lab was no longer was removed. The civilian in charge of the lab was removed, and they put the Chinese military in charge in September.
Which, again,
and the third,
you would say is irregular.
Highly irregular. Right. And the third thing they did, which I think is the key, is they put a contract in to redo the ventilation system of the lab.
All of that before December of 2019.
All in September. And we have, you know, and again, it's been declassified to some degree, some of it. There's clear evidence that lab workers and people in Wuhan were beginning to get a non-flu-like respiratory illness between August and October.
Would it take that long? Would it take that long, doctor, to blow up? Or because here in the U.S., I mean, obviously, once we hit March and April, I mean, it blew up, but it did take a little time. So does that make sense that it took a little time there?
Yeah, it took. I mean, they had millions of people infected. I mean, they shut down the trains, they shut down the city. Yeah, you know, as they got into November, they had a huge epidemic starting. And of course, by December, It was enormous. So, but the original epidemic started somewhere between August and October, the original event, the original leak, and then it started spreading. Now, remember, and I was very in close contact with my counterpart, George Gao, head of CDC in China. George, you know, assured me initially that there was no human-to-human transmission. I challenged him because of the first 27 cases, three of them, there were three clusters in families. And I said, George, I'm not convinced you're right. These are three clusters in the same family. Sounds like it might have gone from person to person. He said he had high degree of confidence it didn't. Well, he was wrong. And the second thing he said that there's, and this is the problem calling it SARS-like, he said there was no asymptomatic illness. And SARS and MERS don't cause asymptomatic illness. So it's pretty easy to track them. You look for symptomatic sick people. Turns out for COVID, the most common transmission is asymptomatic. So when you look at the initial epidemic that came out, probably of the laboratory, young people that were working in the lab, even if they got infected, they didn't have any symptoms.
They didn't know.
It wasn't until it started to get in the older population. And I don't know if you remember, but you can go back and look at the news, how China was rapidly building 25,000, you know, 2,500 bed hospitals.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. They built them
overnight.
It was incredible.
Overnight.
Yeah.
Because they had a huge pandemic. And they never really related to the full degree of it. But they had a huge, huge, huge pandemic. And unfortunately, you know, as you know, even in our country, our first case, I think, was January 21st. You know, I remember even up through the end of February, I think I had 14 cases in the United States. Right. And of course, we have now over a million people died of COVID. So it definitely, unfortunately, and the reason I'm normally I don't like to, speak out and be and targeted, but it's very important we get the origin, because the origin of this virus, and I've said, it's very, very, very probable that this great pandemic was caused by science and an arrogance of science that they didn't see the downside of their gain of function research. I've asked for a moratorium on gain of function research, and I think that's why getting to origin so important, because I'm not sure society's ready for that. But I think we should do a moratorium on gain of function research, have a broad debate about whether we need to do it. It shouldn't just be a debate among scientists. It should be a debate among all of society. If society decides we need to do this because there's a potential positive aspect to it downstream, then they have to figure out how to do it in a safe and responsible and effective way. It's not something that we should be doing in every university laboratory across this country right now. Unfortunately, many universities are doing this as I speak today.
Now, when you were at the hearing and you spoke about how you were excluded from a call that was discussing the origins of COVID in the early days of all this. Now, that has gotten some pushback. You've probably heard, but Dr. Fauci, he spoke to Fox's Neil Cavuto last week, and this is what he had to say. I want you to hear Dr. Fauci.
He is totally and unequivocally incorrect in what he's saying, that I excluded him. I had nothing to do with who would be on that call. That call was organized by a group of evolutionary virologists in order to discuss the possibility that this might actually be a virus that was actually engineered. So I didn't put anybody on the list of that call, nor did I take anybody else.
And he says half the people on the call felt it might have been from a lab. What's your response to his response to your testimony?
Well, I think he's incorrect. I mean, I talked to Tony in January on several occasions about the importance of us aggressively investigating these two possibilities, and that I thought NIH should take a lead. Tony, it was totally within Tony's power to make sure my voice was able to be part of that call. And I didn't know that the call had occurred, actually, until the Freedom of Information Act came out and showed that they had these calls. I was quite disappointed that that he and his colleagues didn't give me the opportunity to fully participate in those discussions. I mean, I was the CDC director. I was the individual that asked for this aggressive scientific evaluation. So, I don't know who sent the invitations out. I know I didn't get one. I know I didn't get to participate. I know he didn't discuss this. And I know several days after that call, everybody on that call that he says thought like me somehow flipped their position, and that they all agreed to a single narrative that it came from nature. I'm not going to say who I spoke to that was on that call, but I did talk to people after I found out about it, after the Freedom of Information, and tried to figure out why I wasn't included. And I was told that I wasn't included because it was decided there needed to be a single narrative, a single decision that we all signed up and agreed to. And there was a consensus that I wouldn't agree to that narrative. I wouldn't have agreed to it, but I was not engaged. And I think he's disingenuous in his pushback.
Earlier this year, we spoke, and you talked about how you thought that we should rethink the COVID vaccine and call it a COVID medicine. And you thought people who are vulnerable should get a shot or an updated vaccine every 12 to 16 weeks. Is that still the way you think we should look at this?
Yeah, I think we have to understand COVID immunity. And I was always an advocate of giving credit for natural immunity. And I was always an advocate as a virologist and someone who spent my life in vaccines that we should assume that natural infection is going to provide immunity at least as good as a vaccine. Secondly, it was very clear as the virus began to change with the Wuhan strain, if you got infected with it, you were protected for about eight months. Maybe 8 to 12 months. And the vaccine protected you for about 8 to 12 months against the Wuhan strain. But then when we got to the Delta strain, that if you got infected with it, you were only protected for 5 to 6 months. And same with the vaccine. And then when we got to Omicron, it dropped to 4 months. And we got to Omicron 5, it dropped to 3 months. So, you know, I'm back in clinical practice and I'm helping people navigate. I do think the focus should be vaccinating the vulnerable, maintaining their immunity. What I do is I evaluate their immunity, their antibody levels to spike protein, semi-quantitative, to get an understanding of how much immunity I can detect in them. And I pretty much recommend highly vulnerable people that have a high risk for poor outcome, including myself, that we get vaccinated every 4 to 6 months.
But we didn't have a massive winter surge this time around. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think you had a lot of infection. I don't think you saw as much illness to some degree because of the amount of immunity that we have. I mean, Omicron 5 infected probably 60 to 70% of the population in the United States. So that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that blunts it. Now, I will tell you, I was a senior public health advisor for Governor Hogan until he stepped down as governor, and I stepped down as his public health advisor. We were losing anywhere from 5 to 20 people a day in Maryland, and they were vaccinated. And I used to get very upset when the president would say, this is an epidemic of the unvaccinated. No, it wasn't. It was people were getting this infection whose immunity had waned and the vaccine had waned. You probably know this. You can look it up after this call. But right now, we're losing 400 to 500 people a day or dying in this country from COVID. I don't consider that no little deal. That's a big deal. All right. It's now the third leading cause of death in America. It didn't exist 4 years ago.
So when you hear people say, is the pandemic over? Are we past COVID? You obviously would say no in that way.
Yeah, I mean, the impact of this epidemic on causing premature death of those of us over 65 is still substantial. And the only thing we have to minimize that is trying to maintain immunity. I don't think we're getting the proper guidance we need to get from NIH, FDA, and CDC. And I'm disappointed that there hasn't been more aggressive attempts to define what level of immunity you need to be able to prevent you, if not from getting sick enough to go to the hospital and die. Remember, these vaccines don't prevent infection to any degree. That's the problem, all right? They modify the pathogen-host interaction, so the next consequence is that you don't get sick enough to be hospitalized and die. But I'm going to come back to the fact that you may think it's over, but tomorrow there's going to be 400 people, maybe 500 people that die from COVID. That's huge. And so, you know, as I say, my clinical practice now is largely trying to help people navigate how to stay out of the hospital, how to keep their immunity high. Do they need to be revaccinated every 4 months, every 6 months, every 8 months? I don't think the focus should be on the non-vulnerable. I think that's a mistake. If this vaccine prevented infection, then I could argue let's focus on the younger age groups. But the fact is, I think our focus should be on the vulnerable, on the nursing homes, on those of us over 65, those of us with comorbidities. We should be doing everything to keep people from becoming a statistic from COVID. As a doctor, and I'm an internist, you know, I spend time trying to help my patients prevent cancer and heart disease. Why? Because of the number one and number two cause of death. Well, guess what number three is now? COVID. I spend a lot of time trying to help them maximize their ability to prevent them from dying of COVID. Not the least of which is try to maintain their vaccine status, but also to keep rapid tests at home. And if they get sick, test yourself. And if you do get positive, get on Paxlovid, get treated. It's tragic that 400 to 500 people are dying a day right now. None of those people would have to die if they were diagnosed and treated with Paxlovid. So I think there's a huge failure in our medical approach to confronting this. We're at a stage now that we have to live with this virus. We have to learn how to live with it. We have to learn how to survive in its context. But we do have some powerful tools, the vaccine and Paxlovid. I'd like to have a lot more antivirals, but at least we have a couple. But people who think this is all over, I don't think they're looking carefully at the data. And you can go after this call and you can pull up the CDC and you can see exactly how many people died yesterday.
And it's also equally important to know exactly how this started still, in your opinion.
Absolutely. Because, you know, my big push on this is not to go back and point fingers. I'm not a person that believes the origin of the virus is China's problem. I wish China had been more transparent post the pandemic, but it's not China's problem. It happened to be done in a Chinese lab, but it was funded by NIH. It was funded by the State Department. It was funded by USAID, and it was defunded by the United States Defense Department.
But China let it go and spread around the world.
So, yeah, their response afterwards was problematic. I'll agree with that. But don't give the American scientific community a free pass. They funded it, right? And don't give the European scientific community and the scientific community at large the free pass, because in 2011 and 2012, they went on an aggressive campaign to support gain-of-function research.
Well, Dr. Fauci has said over and over again that that's not true. Do you think he's lying?
Lying about what?
Well, he has gone back and forth with Senator Rand Paul about whether the U.S. Was backing and funding gain-of-function research on COVID, and he has said that that's not true.
His comments are highly misleading and not truthful. Now, whether he understands that or not, Tony, you know, is playing with words, because what he'll tell you is he got a group of independent scientists to come up, and the National Academy and others, and they redefined the gain-of-function research. And they define it in a way that he believes excludes the work that was done in the lab. Because he says to have gain-of-function research, you have to start with a pathogen that's pathogenic for humans and make it more pathogenic. So if you start with a pathogen that's not pathogenic for humans and make it pathogenic, he says that's not gain-of-function research. Of course it's gain-of-function research. And I'm sure Congress will... Look, even NIH has admitted that they were doing gain-of-function research. Tony hasn't admitted it, but the leadership of NIH has admitted it. They were doing gain-of-function. They were funding gain-of-function research. But I don't want to just blame NIH, because USAID was funding it. State Department was funding it. The Defense Department was funding it. You know, and it's really a broad responsibility of the scientific community that was endorsing the gain-of-function research. Remember, Obama put a moratorium on it. And Fauci and Collins passed a memo in December 2017 that gave them permission to approve certain research that you and I might think was under gain-of-function. So it could go on. But this was definitely gain-of-function research. He's parsing words. It's back to the Clinton, well, what's the meaning of is? This is gain-of-function research, and that most people of goodwill can see that.
Dr. Robert Redfield, former director of the Centers for Disease Control under President Trump at the time when the pandemic started, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dave. Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, in these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.